The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry with Joe McGill.
Good morning, how are you this morning? I'm Joe McGill and you're listening to the Saturday Supplement and I hope I find you well wherever you are, listening to us around the world on RadioKerry.ie or on the Radio Kerry app or on the traditional wireless 96 to 98 FM. Very busy programme for you on the Saturday Supplement. We'll be hearing from author and hill walker John G. O'Dwyer on what makes the Kerry Way so unique as a walking route. We'll also be speaking to German native and artist Marcus Earhart, who I caught up with during the week, and he'll be talking to me about his latest exhibition, 9 years in Glimbay, which is showing at the exhibition space in the Department of Culture, Communications and Sport in New Road, Killarney, government buildings as many of you would know them as. We'll also hear another episode of An Artist's Kingdom, which features artists from around the county. And this time we'll be featuring Ciara Chute, who is based in Ballinskelligs. But before I go on with the programme, many of you might have heard of the sad passing of Donal O'Connor from Tarbert. Now, listeners to the programme would have heard many contributions by Donal to this programme. He was a wonderful historian, a proud farmer, and a great man, and that is testament to the many tributes he's been getting during the week. I found him a font of knowledge altogether, and I'd ring him during the week and I'd be on the phone to him for ages. And it's something I don't like to do when you're interviewing someone before, and is to talk to them too long, because they might get rid of all of it when they're talking to you on the phone and they might give you the shorter version on radio. But there was no fear of that with Donal. And you could also go down other avenues with him. He knew all the folklore, all the history, and he was a great man for poetry and writing songs and humorous poems. He was a fantastic guest. And like I say, that knowledge. And how many times have I said on this programme, when an old person dies, a library burns. Donal was in his 90s, because we used to speak about that, how fit and healthy he was for a man in his 90s, and such a great brain as well. Some of the great stories, and I will play them for you at a later time when it's more appropriate. But in relation to, like, the killing of the pig, he described that in such detail, and that's our history. And he was preserving it by telling it. Talked about the fishing, you know, around Tarbert and the Shannon Estuary and around that area, and so much more. He'd a famous uncle that was involved with the King of Norway, I think we were talking about the rescue. And much more besides. So it was awful sad news to hear it this week. My thoughts and prayers are with his family and his friends and the people of Tarbert and the people of Ballylongford, where he's originally from as well, and the people that knew him. May he rest in peace, and all I can say, he'll always be remembered, and his stories and his knowledge will live on as well. And I think he did the people of Kerry a great service by coming on and telling those stories and preserving them as well. So we just wanted to mention him this morning. And his funeral mass is taking place this morning in St. Mary's Church, arriving at 11:30 for Requiem Mass at 12 noon. So again, may Donal rest in peace. Now, a week-long hike, a three-day hike, or just a day out, the 210-kilometre Kerry Way has numerous routes featuring dramatic peaks and windswept lochs, while encountering hidden glens, wild moorlands and magnificent coastal vistas, writes John G. O'Dwyer in his column Hikes and Trails in the Irish Examiner. And I caught up with him during the week to speak to him about what makes the Kerry Way so unique. So, John, thanks a million for joining me. It's always a pleasure to talk to you about our great walkways and trails we have around this country and indeed in this county. And that's where we're going to be speaking with our Kerry hat on this morning, because you wrote an article in the Examiner about the versatility and how fine a walk the Kerry Way is. It is very versatile, isn't it? And it's very unique.
It is, absolutely. And, you know, it's very user-friendly as well as that. And, of course, there's, you know, good rail connections, good connections to Killarney. So what you can do is Irish people can, I'd always say, you know, if you don't feel up to walking at all in maybe 8 or 9 days, you can divide it into 3 or 4 and you'll enjoy it much more. You know, come down for a long weekend here and there to Killarney and do parts of it. And of course, the great thing is then, unlike other walking trails that, you know, tend to be linear, it brings you right back to where you started. There's great convenience there as well.
Yeah, 210 kilometres. It's quite a distance, isn't it?
It is indeed. When I was putting the book together for Rucksack Readers, I'd written that with Sandra Batwell. There was a lot of work and a lot of walking in it. And I was, of course, doing it in stages as well. But it is. But it makes it perfect. It's ideal in the sense that I would imagine it's Ireland's best-known walking trail. And it's one of those that brings people in from abroad. And you can do the whole thing, have a lovely holiday of 9 or 10 days and do it. Or maybe spend 2 weeks down in the southwest of Ireland. You'll have lots more to do. And walk the Kerry Way, or indeed walk part of it. But what I'm great thing about it is there's huge variety. So, the terrain up around Killarney, then it changes so much when you go down around Waterville and Cahar Daniel, and then changes again on the old Kenmare Road when you're coming in from Kenmare. And then, of course, there's the old Coach Road, which has magnificent views, and that's high up, we'll say, coming out from Glenveigh and heading on down towards Cahar Sivean. Absolutely wonderful there as well on Drung Hill.
Yeah. 9 days in total it would take to complete, and I see you had a Facebook post with your article, like a challenging 9 days. What does that entail, you know, a day walking?
Yeah, well, a day walking, I suppose, the whole thing, you're talking there about 25 kilometres a day, maybe 16 miles. That's what most people can do. Now, you have to work it out with accommodation and that. And, of course, a lot. I know a guy who just took off with his tent. And what he loved about it was you got away from it all. It's not like maybe, which has its advantages, but you go out and do the Camino from Sarria. And I've been out there as well. Sometimes when you're coming into Santiago, it looks like it's the nearest I can say to it is it's like going towards Croke Park the day Kerry are in an All-Ireland final. You have people all around you.
You mentioned, you know that you've walked all over the world. So where do you think it stands among the kind of global walkways that are out there?
Oh, I think it stands very high. I mean, the great thing about Ireland, I think, is, and you go to Camino and that, there's nice scenery. But the fantastic thing about Ireland is the massive variety of scenery that's in a relatively small island. But then if you go down to Kerry, again, you know, it's by world standards a very small county. The vast amount of different scenery you can see. You know, you have the McGillicuddy Reeks, you have the lakes, you have the coastal views, like I mentioned, out over Dingle Bay. You have the history, and I'm thinking now of doing another one, maybe about Daniel O'Connell. So you have all that history that's down there, Cahar Sivean, where Daniel O'Connell was born there at Carlin as well. Derrynane, all of that. And, it's an area that's away from everything else. And, of course, the highest mountains are in the middle of it. But you don't have the big pulls. And I would say, like, looking at it, and I don't want to talk to a Kerry audience, but this is what I believe in. I think there are two ways that stand out are walking trails, and they're both in Kerry, the Dingle Way and the Kerry Way. To me, they are the two best. You say, well, what about the Burren Way? Yes, but those two in Kerry bring you back to where you start. The Burren Way is great. There's coastal scenery, and then you go to the Burren. But what you don't get is the variety of scenery that you get on the Dingle Way and on the Kerry Way. And I think that's where they trump the others.
Yeah, and there's a great allocation. Heart nature to the walk as well. I have a brewery in Waterville, and I get a lot of visitors into the brewery that would be walking along the Kerry Way. Sometimes they come off it by mistake now, and that's how they make their way to me. But one guy was only in, geez, about 2 weeks ago maybe, and he had a camper van and he had a bike on the back, but he was nipping in and out doing the Kerry Way as well with a tent.
Yeah, absolutely. You can do that. And that is the one thing I think generally why we should be promoting our walking trails. I mean, the problem with a lot of Irish tourism is kind of bedeviled by urbanization. So what you have is huge numbers of hotel rooms in Killarney, and then people come out and they, you know, you don't have big numbers in Dingle, you don't have big numbers in South Kerry. They take off for a one-day tour, and then they all come back to Killarney. So the amount of spending they leave down there for people like yourself, down in Waterville, is relatively small. Now, when you get to something like the Kerry Way, then you will find that people will stay out on the peninsula. And again, with the Dingle Way, so it drags spending out of the main centres and brings people out into the communities. And actually, then they appreciate Ireland a lot more. You're going to appreciate Ireland a lot more if you walk it on the Kerry Way. You get to the heart and soul of Ireland. Whereas if you go on a bus, well, you get out every now and then, but mostly you're appreciating Ireland through glass.
Mm. Recently, Fall to Ireland were out talking about how they're going to be promoting Ireland, and there was a real concentration kind of on the European market. And that's a market that really love to walk and to hike, you know, especially Germans, the Dutch, the French. They all like to get out and do the outdoors, and, you know, up to, you know, an elderly age as well.
Oh, they do. It would continue on there, and there was Nordic walking and that. So they do. They love to get out all the time. They were now. What has happened is that market has fallen since COVID, really, into Ireland, and we've got to regenerate it. And we're dependent on the American market, which is a slightly different type of market, and generally speaking, wouldn't be into doing the law. You get a small cohort from the States that would do that, but a bigger, much bigger cohort from Europe. And they would also appreciate, because, you know, getting out more, for example, if you take Europe, coastal, you know, Germany or whatever, they don't have any worthwhile coastal scenery there. They don't see it much. So the great coastal scenery, the west of Ireland, and of course, walking along. I mean, if you never did the Kerry Way, I would say, do the walk from Glenbey down to Cathair Sáidhbhín, and you see the very soul of Ireland, and the views there are absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah, when I did marketing in college, we spoke about a B&B, how they turned their business around concentrating on anglers, and they changed, like, they had a freezer in their place, they had a wet room where they could put their waders or their wellies and all that. They kind of changed it, and they became known for that. Now, there's a lot of businesses in Kerry that do that as well for walkers, so you can tailor towards them. And what would a walker be looking for, you know, in regards to accommodation and things like that?
Well, that would be it. I mean, what you've got to do then is position yourself out there. But one of the things that I would think of is you're concentrating on that then. What you have to do, and you may charge a small amount for it, but what you say to somebody, I think this would be the single biggest thing. You end up somewhere like Drummond or somewhere like that. You know, there's a hostel there in Italy. But if they're not saying the area is full, and somebody is saying they're coming to Drummond, and your B&B is maybe 2 or 2.5 miles away, what you have to do is pick them up and take them to your, you know, make sure you're able to pick them up, that they can contact you and you can pick them up. Then that you have drying rooms, and then people who want a meal. If you want, you know, and one of the things then you may have to do is drop them into Waterfield or something like that, if you're not providing the meals yourself. But of course, a lot of people are tired at the end of the day. They want to come in, have a drying room, a very nice warm shower, and then a meal afterwards. If you can provide all of that, you need a more comprehensive service to look after walkers. Otherwise, then you kind of, and you have to some extent, if you're out of the way, if you're not right on the way, which is very few would be, you have to, I think, help bring them to your place as well as that. And they don't mind if you charge them £5 from the diesel or £10, you know?
Yeah, like you mentioned the Dingle Way, but the Kerry Way and all the different walkways that are around Ireland, it takes great foresight for the people behind it, and also the landowners, because, like, it's a mammoth task when you start the out trying to establish these routes and everything else. So it's kind of a holistic approach with everyone behind it that makes these such a success.
Yeah, absolutely. That is one of the things, and we have to think about that, because the tourism industry, the hospitality trade, and yourself, maybe you make money out of this. By and large, landowners don't, so they give something free gratis. And sometimes I get annoyed. you know, when you see some kind of a big headline, oh, the landowners can get somebody here. You know, I've been walking for 40, I get old, I'm just, I used to say 30 years, I'm getting near 40 years now, and I have never had a problem with a landowner in Ireland. A couple of times you said you wouldn't mind going around that way, but it's always consensual, always polite, and we get headlines which show them in a bad light, but 99.9% of them, you know, allow walking without any problem, and the whole industry is built on that, and they get very little in return. Now, there is a walk scheme. I'd love to see that extended more to the likes of the Kerry Way.
That's John G. O'Dwyer there, and we'll hear the second part of that interview after these.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you by Quinlan's Fish Shop and Seafood Bar, the Mall Tralee. Treat yourself to the freshest takeaway fish and chips today, right in the heart of Tralee.
Now let's return to the interview I did during the week with John G. O'Dwyer about what makes the Kerry Way so special. And I posed the question to him, if you had one day, what would be your ideal part of the Kerry Way? You've one day to do the Kerry Way. What's your ideal route, John?
Well, yeah, I would think so. What I would think of is, if you want to do it, you know, reasonably, I mean, I would think that walking terms, I would go probably from Glenbey all the way straight down to Drummond and maybe onto Waterville there. If you want to stay in Cahir Sibhín, however, it's quite a big way out of the way. So what I would think of is, that would be fine, but I think what then, the B&B owners or the people who are providing accommodation there would probably not expect you to walk Cahir Sibhín. That's a fairly long leg that they would come out and pick you up on the route and drop you back out. And they wouldn't charge the same as a taxi, but they would charge a small bit for doing it, and then they would be getting the money as well. I think that's what I would think. And then I think you do. I love then the coastal route. You can cross by the Windy Gap as well to Cahir Daniel, but I love the route along there by Derrynane. That's my favourite. You know, I mean, maybe, you know, that the O'Connells, maybe there might have been brandy coming ashore there that they might or might not have paid duty on. But you'd say, God, nobody would ever notice you down there. That's brilliant. And then I think an overnight in Kenmare, and of course the old Kenmare Road is great as well as that. But I think this, if you're to walk it, to walk into Cahir Sibhín and walk out, that would be very difficult. I think people there have to cooperate and pick walkers up. And yeah, they do largely, I know.
Yeah, well, Morris Hunting Cap O'Connell was a famous smuggler, so you're right on the money there.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, that is one of the things, and they were clever enough in penal times to hold on to their land. And then as well as that, I mean, you know, Daniel lived with him, and he had money from the smuggling, so he was able to send Daniel off to study in France and then go and become a barrister in London as well as that. So, you know, so it's that kind of money. But I'm sure the O'Connells would say, well, the British shouldn't be in Ireland anyway, so why should we be paying duty to a British government in London?
Yeah, but this is it. It's the history. Like another story I heard there about Morris Hunting Cap was, they used to put a donkey on the shore there with a light on the donkey, so people would think that was a boat, and they would come in further and they'd wreck their boats or their ships, and then they'd be able to get all the paraphernalia, whatever was going in the boat. So it's that rich history you're talking about, I think, as well, that makes the Kerry Way so unique for the visitor and the local alike.
Oh, absolutely, and I think that's it. I heard about that now, wreckers, they call them. That was happening a lot in Cornwall and Devon. I never heard, but I'm sure the Kerry Way, the people in Kerry, the Kenny people of Kerry, would find a way, of course, and the ship would break up then, and whatever they had on it, all the brandy, whatever, would come ashore free gratis and for nothing. There was wreckers in Cornwall. You see, you're learning something all the time, but I didn't know what happened in Kerry.
Yeah, well, we're cute enough, you should know that. We're ahead of the curve.
Well, you'd be a long way ahead of all of us anyway.
John, what are you up to at the moment?
I'm writing another book, funnily enough, that's it. I mean, I have my book out, 50 Best Irish Walks. Mm-hmm. That has sold out now. It's just on its way to selling out a second time. It's only there 2 years. But what I'm actually doing is I'm working on a new book called, just on the computer here with it now. It's Stories from the Irish Landscape. And I'll be looking for all of those kind of stories, that you walks with stories. That's what it's going to be about. So an emphasis on the stories. I was doing Hoot, which would have had its smugglers as well. I was working on that and the gun running as well as that into Hoot and famous shipwrecks that were there. But I'm sure now I wouldn't include there in Anne. So you've now given me an idea. I'm sure I may be able to include something about wreckers on the coast of Kerry as well. They're the stories that bring a walk to life.
Very good. Well, we did a documentary on the piracy and smuggling of Kerry, so I must send that on to you. So it'd be
you send that on to me, and I'm sure there'll be stories there. I'll be very much looking for stories. I believe a walk where you go right and left is boring. It's the stories. As a person said, there's an old Irish saying, Gurrig and Boher doing. What do you do? That's the short in the road. Tell me a story.
Excellent. And finally, John, where can people go if they want to avail of your books?
Well, if they want to avail of my books, most of them now. If you want a book, I have a book on the Kerry Way with Sandra Bardwell. That's generally, it's available, I'd say, in the bookshops in Kerry. But you can get it. The publisher there was Rucksack Reader. So you can go online and buy it online there as well as that. My other books then, most of them, 50 Great Irish Walks and Great Irish Pilgrim Journeys, they are actually up there with Corrock Books. So you can buy from Corrock Books, or of course you can buy it on Gill as well. And I'm sure I've seen them there when I'm down there. I'm sure they'll be in some of the bookshops in Killarney Killarney and of course Tralee as well, and the other bookshops in Dingle and that. So great, and you have a little bookshop down there in Waterville as well, haven't you?
In the Sneem, yeah, I think you opened that.
Oh, Sneem, yes. That's it. Yes.
I came
down to open it once.
You did, I think it's in Clogle as well in the bookshop there. Hikes and Trails, that's your article you write in the Examiner as well, isn't it?
That's what it's called, yes. That's the regular article in the outdoor page of the Examiner. I'm amazed. I mean, I try to put all of those, then the whole idea behind it is that whatever you're talking about, you put the story of the walk, there's a story in it as well as that. And mind you, they tell me in the Examiner, you don't know who reads it in the physical newspaper, but it's very popular on when they down people, they know if the numbers were downloaded online, and that's quite high. So I'm quite chuffed with that.
Excellent. Well, it is the time of New Year's resolutions and everything else, so it might be a resolution for someone listening now to get on the Kerry Way, locals and visitors alike, to start, you know, beginning that journey, because like you don't have to do it all in the 9 days, you can come in and out of it, so it could be a great start. John G. O'Dwyer, thanks a million for talking to me, a pleasure as always. That's John G. O'Dwyer there, and I want to thank John for that. We're going to take a break, and after this, we'll be speaking to Marcus Earhart about his exhibition, 9 Years in Glimbay, which is in government buildings in Killarney.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry, brought to you by Quinlan's The Mad Monk in Killarney, serving the finest seafood in a cosy, modern atmosphere. Book your special experience today at seafoodbar.ie.
Now, German native Marcus Earhart is an artist who has been living in Glimbay for the past 9 years. He is currently showing his latest exhibition, 9 Years in Glimbay, at the exhibition space in the Department of Culture, Communications and Sport in New Road, Killarney. And I caught up with him there at those buildings, but I first spoke to Michael Moore on the building and the importance of the exhibition space to the county.
I'm Michael Moore and I'm the accommodation officer here for government offices in Killarney.
So, Michael, tell us firstly, I suppose, the function of this building, because people might know what you actually do here.
So it's as the name suggests, it's government offices. So there's 8 different government bodies share this building. So the anchor tenant who manage it and who I work for is the Department of Culture, Communications and Sport. And then we also have staff from the Department of Enterprise, Tourism and Employment, National Shared Service, who look after payroll for people like the guards. We have staff from the National Parks and Wildlife Service, the OPW, the Coast Guard. We have 2 school inspectors. We have someone from the State Exams Commission, and we have some guards moving in the next month or two. So the idea in terms of helping our climate targets is to get as many people using the building as possible, share the space and make best use of it while we have it.
And speaking about making best use of it, I've been here a number of times now in relation to the exhibitions that take place here now, and it's about showing off the best of what Kerry has to offer in terms of artists. That's a great feature of the place.
Yeah, it was really, the OPW have to be congratulated for when they came up with the design for this building, putting into it an exhibition space, and especially since COVID, we've been really keen to use that space as much as we can to get staff together, to talk to each other, interact, learn from each other, and also to bring the public in. the public paid for this building with their taxes, so they as much as possible, they should be in here enjoying it. And the exhibition space is probably the best way we can do that, bringing people together.
Marcus's exhibition, I was looking at it downstairs. It's beautiful, isn't it? Stunning.
Yeah, I mean, I have to be careful. That's the sixth exhibition we've had in this year, so I can't really say I have a favourite. But visually, I think it's absolutely stunning. And we've had transition year students have brought in their art. We had a guy from West Kerry, Paul Egan, who brought in, he had 50 Kerry icons he'd spray painted onto old vinyl records. So we had Tracy, who runs the art house next door, had the art of 110 students who've been with her for the year. She had a kind of her end of year exhibition here. We had something about climate change. Like this is all new to me, but I'm delighted to see the variety we're getting in here. It's amazing.
And the Kerry Select Now evening, you know, it gathered so many artists in the one room, and like a lot of artists work in isolation, so there was a real communal aspect to that. So that's a brilliant, another great feature of having a place like this.
Yeah, that was something I hadn't even expected, that this would be kind of almost a group for them to come and interact. I was thinking about it in terms of bringing the public in, but the Kerry Art Now group brought in over, I think we had 1,600 visitors for that, and it's just brilliant. Like, even yesterday, I just happened to be down in reception, and there was four ladies who were out for a walk, and they saw the Marcus's art in the window. They came in and they spent 20 minutes they couldn't believe that someone had made an exhibition about wellies, and then they came in and read about it, and they loved it.
Yeah,
brilliant.
It's a tourist town. It's a kind of, we say, it's the capital of tourism in Ireland, but this is another added feature to that.
Yeah, definitely. And we have some exhibitions coming this year we think that'll be a really big draw for tourists. And it's on my list of things to do, is to link more with the tourist office here and get people to come in here. Because at the moment, it's kind of word of mouth. It's through artists like Marcus. It's through Kate Kennelly's been really good at publicising stuff. But we'll have to create a mailing list and get more involved with the local tourists and the chamber and stuff like that. Because there's an awful lot going on here.
Sometimes government buildings, they can be intimidating, but this is a very welcoming space, and you welcome people in here to the exhibition.
I think it's the art that makes it welcoming. It is just a big stone, glass and steel block. It's not that interesting, and it's kind of really interesting. We've done events here for Culture Night. We've had children in. We had 80 to 100 people doing the Siege of Venice on the front plaza 2 Septembers ago. And kids have come up to me going, what goes on in this building? Because they don't know. They walk past it every day. And it's just government offices. It could be anything at all. So it's really good to get people in and say, well, actually, this is where tourism policy is decided for the country. This is where arts policy, the basic income for arts, was envisaged first in this building. So it's brilliant to bring people in. And maybe some of the children that are walking past here every day will go, actually, that sounds interesting. Maybe I'll apply for a job in the civil service.
Excellent. Thanks a million for talking to me, and continued success with it.
Great. Thank you very much. Thanks for giving us the time. Thank you.
Michael Moore there. And then I spoke to the main man himself, German native Marcus Earhart, who has been an artist living in Glenbey for the past 9 years. And I first spoke to him about growing up in Germany.
So I grew up in Idar-Oberstein in Germany, which is known for gemstone business and gemstone cutting. And I was a small town boy, as you say, and I was raised by my parents, who are in the gemstone business. My father was a gemstone cutter, my mother learned that as well, and I would have been in the sixth generation of to become a gemstone cutter. But I don't know, because of my hands, I didn't have the feeling in my fingertips, because you have to have strength and sensitivity at one point.
Whoa. So there's a natural ability to it as well as a learned ability.
Yes, yeah. Yes, I think so. And also, you know, as a young guy, a small city, I was always up to be with the beautiful people. And so I thought, okay, gemstone and all that business, it's would not be my thing of interest. These days.
Just before we move on to gemstone, like, was it in your area? Was it a popular profession, or was it just within your family?
No, it's the whole area is known for gemstone business and jewelry then, and we have goldsmiths, we have casting companies, and you have the people who do the engravings, who do the cutting, and who deal with gemstone, all kinds of gemstones, also diamonds. And so Ida Oberstein is world known for that business.
Mm. And where do they source their gemstones from?
Right in the beginning when they started mining in the area where they found agate. Mm-hmm. And by coincidence, they found out that they can color these stones into brighter colors like blue and not the natural gray. And so it developed, and they didn't find enough material, so they moved mainly to Brazil. So there's a huge colony of people from Ida Oberstein in Brazil, which then delivered back new material and other stones like aquamarine, rubies, emeralds. And so that whole business developed over over decades.
Hmm. So then gemstones weren't for you, so what did you go on and do?
Well, I was, as said, I was always up to be with the beautiful people because, you know, cutting stones, it's a dirty job.
Yeah.
It demands a lot, and it's not glamorous at all.
Mm-hmm.
And so with 11... I knew, or I got into contact with an industrial designer, Gerhard Koch. He was the designer for Fistler, for example, for pottery, and or kitchen supply. And he taught me that if you want to become a designer, you have to learn it from scratch. So you have to be aware of what you want. You have to have the vision, you have to think three-dimensional, and you have to draw. And after your idea, after you sketched your idea, the next step is to communicate it with people who can produce it. And so that was quite a process. And so I was in his studio between all these kitchen items there, and I started drawing and started to visualize my ideas. And so I was about 11, 12 when I met him, so that was very early. And at the same time, I also knew that I was a gay guy. And so it all went into something, into the creative part and away from the city where I grew up and to the big world and to become a designer. That was my first idea of everything.
You were so young, to have a great mentor like that. It must have given you a great head start.
Yes. Oh, he was very inspiring. Gerhard, he was, this kind of guy like Luigi Colani. So, a bit flamboyant, but very unique. And so a character. And but I found it very interesting that he, the way he started an idea. And so it was always to create an image first in his head, which becomes a sentence or a red thread through our conversation as well. And that he starts from the idea up to the end, until you have the finished product. And so I found that whole process very interesting because many things can happen and it is also demanding. You have to have a lot of knowledge of the material. And I mean, in design, you can create the shape, the material, the color, and what I think and what he taught me also is most important in design is the proportion.
Mm.
So you can have the best material and the nicest color and the most wonderful shape, but when the proportion is not all right, you will not sell it.
Mm. So he gave you the fundamentals, were strong with him, so it sounds as well, but then you had the creative expression, yourself as well. So I was reading downstairs, did you win an award for an opulent? You designed an opulent dress or something? You were second in Germany?
Exactly.
Journeyman designer or something, was it? Yeah?
So I finished school with what we call Abitur.
Okay.
And so I made that in economics. And as Gerhard taught me to learn it from scratch, I would like to go into fashion industry and into fashion design. And so I learned tailoring at first. And I left Ida Oberstein with 18, moved to Munich, and I got taught in tailoring at the sample studio of Escada in Munich, which was in the early 90s, which was the top-notch brand worldwide for luxury. And so I moved there and started a three-year apprenticeship, learning how to do a buttonhole or how to sew the lapel and how to do embroideries. So it took me almost 3 years to learn the whole industry in there, but handmade.
Okay.
And so I remember one evening, Margareta Lai, she was the founder of Escada. So, you know, as a young guy and having an icon like her, I asked her, what is fashion? What is fashion about? What do you think is fashion? And we were on the floor where there were photographs of her as a model for the new look of Christian Dior made by Cecil Beaton. And she said, look at this picture. I'm not looking like that. It was retouched. She was in a corset. And she said, fashion itself doesn't exist. And when you see a photograph like this, fashion is all about an image. And to be honest, these days I did not quite understand what she was talking about. And she said also, the product we deliver, the image, it's a hard work. And I got that. Mm. And by that idea she transported, it helped me later to keep the distance to what I do. So I was always aware to create an image with what I do, and I create it for myself first, and then I go to the public with it. And in her case, it was, made by a lot of work, and it has to be luxurious and it has to be elegant. Mm. And so at the end of my apprenticeship, I made an evening gown, and it was not that flamboyant, it was opulent, mm. as you have that, as the style was these days. And so I became second best journeyman in Germany with that.
Amazing.
So your career goes on, and we can't go through your whole career because it's quite vast. But what strikes me is that you don't stay in one lane, that you're constantly evolving. Is that important to you?
I did that apprenticeship at Escada, it was the top-notch brand in Germany, and it was known worldwide. And when I studied fashion design in Trier then, I realized that there are just two more companies like in Germany that would be interesting for my career, which was Jil Sander on one side, and I applied there, and I got rejected with the excuse, you are too pink with gold buttons, which was the signature for Escada. So she was very pure and gray and dark, and I was too colorful for her style. And but you know, I don't mind that. But to get a break into that, I started working for Birkenstock shoes. So that was the complete opposite. I mean, yes, they are not pretty, and they don't have to be pretty. And when I was working or designing shoes for them, I met Karl Birkenstock himself these days, and he explained me why he did these shoes and why they look like that. And yes, I can say the style is German brutalism, and function was the main feature than nice color, good leather quality. It has to be like that. But it was not about design and elegance. Mm. And so that was something I learned from him, you know, to have the function is more important than the look of it.
That is Marcus Earhart there. We're going to hear more from Marcus after these.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you by Quinlan's Fish Shops and Seafood Bars located across the county. Serving the freshest seafood to Kerry families since 1963.
Now let's return to the interview I did with Marcus Earhart, who is currently showing his latest exhibition, 9 Years in Glimbay, at the Department of Culture, Communications and Sport in New Road in Killarney. How did you arrive in Glimbay?
Well, my husband and I, we arrived in Glimbay 9 years ago, and we come to Ireland for 29 years.
Okay.
So we met 29 years ago, and that was our first holiday coming to Ireland. In Germany, on TV, you got always the message from the Irish tourist information, come to Ireland, come to 4 million friends. So we came here, and we felt home. In the beginning, we came from Hahn Airport. We flew into Shannon, and so we saw the Clifton, Connemara area. And then they changed the destination to Kerry. And so in the beginning, we always stayed here in the Kerry area. And sometimes at the Dingle Peninsula, sometimes here on Iverack or and other places. And what we found, it was always every part in Kerry is completely different. And you have higher hills or more plantation. And so it was never boring and very interesting from the landscape. And so about 9 years ago, we found a house at the Dingle Peninsula, which we admired. And unfortunately, the owner asked for more and more money. And then we had an appointment with an estate agent. And so the day before that appointment, the owner asked again for more money, so we cancelled. But we got the books, the flights booked. We had a hotel here in Glenbay, and which was then the base. And so we went to another estate agent, and the cottage we then found was the first house presented, and we walked in, and it was quite clear that this is it. This is our idea of what we always dreamt of, coming to Ireland. So that was spot on, the picture perfect house.
Glimbay, what made you fall in love with Glimbay?
Well, we knew the area by driving the Ring of Kerry and the Ring of Skellig, and we knew Ross Bay Beach, and we found everything very close together, because when you are in Glenbay, it's an hour drive to Dingle, it's 45 minutes to Killarney, it's 35 minutes to the airport, and it's, you know, from that point you can travel all around the three peninsulas, and which doesn't take a lot of time. It's kind of in the center of it.
Marcus Earhart there, and we're going to hear more from him after the news at 10, and also we're going to have an episode of An Artist's Kingdom featuring Ballinskellig-based artist Ciara Chute.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry, brought to you by the new family fish box at Quinlan's Seafood Bars, packed with golden fish goujons, fresh squid, delicious prawns and tasty homemade chips. Order yours to take away today.
Now we're into the second hour of the Saturday Supplement, and I hope you're enjoying the programme so far. If you want to get in touch with me during the week, you can email me, jmcgill@radiokerry.ie. Our theme for In Focus with Dominic Walsh is looking forward, and in brackets, not looking back. So it's a bit abstract, so you'll have to get your thinking cap on, which Dominic Walsh always says. You can send up to 3 photos before midday Wednesday, before the first Saturday of the month, to jmcgill@radiokerry.ie. And give us the story behind the photo as well. We'd love to get that. Now, next Saturday is Frank Lewis, and from 9 to 11, of course, on the Saturday Supplement. A very special one, Vincent Carmody with Tom Donovan and singer Karen Trench will take Frank Lewis to special places associated with each of the 9 unique books Vincent has researched and published over the past 40 years. You're not going to want to miss that. So that's next Saturday from 9 a.m. Now let's return to the interview I did during the week with Marcus Earhart, who is currently showing his exhibition 9 years in Glimby at the exhibition space in the Department of Culture, Communications and Sport in New Road, Killarney. I ask this always to artists in the area. How much does the environment that you're in kind of influence your work? And obviously we're going to be going downstairs in a minute to see the exhibition. To you, it must be a great source of inspiration, the environment to where you moved to.
The environment is very inspiring, especially to the Germans, because they come here because of the landscape and the sheep and the coastline. And I mean, when you walk or hike here in the area, you always find something. You find an amazing view, the most scenic view, or you find, or you can see the sheep, which are very interesting. Or when you go on the beach, you always find something natural or unnatural. And so for me, I always have my nose on the ground. I always look and search, and, you know, I need input.
Mm. And I'd imagine as well, like Kerry and parts of Glimby, there's a nice kind of, not remoteness, but you have the place to yourself as well. It's not like a build-up city. Mm. So that's great for an artist as well, to have your own headspace, I'd imagine.
You have a certain, how to say, you can be alone here, but it's no problem that you find friends and that you have someone in company. Mm. And I mean, our next neighbor is about 200 meters away. So, which I don't know that from Germany. So where we live, it's always very close and intense. And it's, I think the space is very, how to say, set in nature. And you have to live with the nature. And so you observe a lot. I mean, at the moment, you can see that the sunrise, that the moon, the sun is always already coming from a different position now, and you feel the few minutes more light. You can already feel it. Mm. And it is, for some people, it's mystic, but I think it's, for me, it's more the raw nature that I find very interesting. And I mean, when I go to the beach, Ross Bay Beach is different every day. We were yesterday with our dog, and it was cold and chilly, but there was no wind. So it was quite comfortable to walk there. The sea was flat. And, you know, the day before it was all misty and it was wet and cold and windy, and it's, you know, it's always the change from one extreme to another, and you have to deal with it. Mm. Which I find very interesting for me. Mm. And to see our Kara Mountain or Kulro Mountain, I look at it every day, and it's every day it's different. Mm. It's a different light, it's a different color. The shape is always the same, the silhouette, but I quite find it very interesting. You know, sometimes you can stand there on the window and you have all the four seasons, as you say, in one day. Mm. And so the landscape, it does change quick, and it does change a lot. Mm. And that's something I was not used to from my...
Mm. It strikes me that that's something that interests you, because looking at your exhibition downstairs... We mentioned the Wellington boot. There's five or I don't know how many different perspectives on it. And that's something that seems to... You like to look at different angles or different kind of perspectives on something.
Oh, it's definitely. But a belly boot for me, I mean, I love to wear them because I can go wherever I want to. For me, they are kind of a symbol of freedom. On the other side, when I walk through the nature, I leave traces as well. And but as I said, they are for me a symbol of freedom, because I can decide wherever I want to go. And if I want to see, for example, at Ross Bay Beach, I discovered that there's the pyramid orchid. So I didn't know that this orchid even existed. And so, but I got the chance to see it and to discover it, and I was speechless having such an amazing flower, I mean an orchid, at Ross Bay. And but that's yeah, being in the valleys gives me also the possibility to change places and to change perspective, of course.
Yeah, it's amazing as I look at it. Before we go down, have you met other artists since you've been in Kerry in Ireland?
Oh, yes.
And have you interacted?
I mean, I have to say, I know the most amazing people here. And that's because of K-Fest, when K-Fest came into our life. And in the beginning, we were visitors at K-Fest, and we went there. In addition, we bought some art for our house from young Irish artists. And over the years, I mean, I was the first one at the K-Fest and the last one who went. Because I find that was such a vibrant festival. And you could meet all the artists in person. And my main spot was always going to the Boyle's Hall, former Boyle's Hardware, because that was the epicenter. And when you walked in, I mean, it's you have wet walls, and you know, it's a raw space. It's a brutal space. You have brutal light in there. And so when I walked in there, and you could see really immediately which artists pops out and grows in that space, and you can see, or you could see, who kind of collapsed or who just not get everything on point. And so I met the most amazing artists there, just as I said, for example, the Daniel Sexton. He exhibited 3 years ago. He's an artist from Cork. And I will never forget when I entered the room and I saw the portrait. He did a portrait of a prisoner having an egg yolk in his face. And so that was just an impact to see. Also the way he presented his work, everything was in line, very precise and accurate. And so I started talking to him, and I had the feeling, okay, he's not quite there, he's still setting everything up. And even before the opening, I bought the first painting. Or another artist is Lorcan Cassidy from Dublin. He was at that show, also at Boyle's Hall, and he did present a latex homunculus, really weird and odd and quirky sculpture. And he was such a shy guy, standing in the back and observing people, how they react to his art. He was in a neighborhood with Julian Guinea, for example, who's a very dear friend of mine. I admire her work. And Lorcan became 2 years later our artist in residence. He was we took him in our house, and he could stay with us for free. We gave him dinner, food, drinks, and breakfast, and service to drive to K-Fest. And so he presented 2 years later as a completely different artist. Emerged, evolved, a proud big man standing in front of his theme parked area, what he created. And so you can see from K-Fest artists that they evolve, that they develop. Mm. My personal favorite is Kathy Cronin from Tralee. Mm. Can't say that I'm a collector of her work. I mean, when you see her, she's very shy and very decent. But when you see her work, it's in the face and it's a natural force. What she is bringing on canvas, her brush stroke, is so fierce and so vibrant. And I saw her at K-Fest, and I walked by twice, three times, but I was not brave enough to talk to her at that moment, because I was presenting my work as well. And so she became a friend of mine, and she was also at the opening night here. And so I think the Kerry artists, it's an extremely competitive field we have, because there are so many brilliant artists here. But on the other side, we don't compete, because everyone is aware of his own style and of his own character. and that we actually do not compete. We just bring a variety.
Yeah, because even when I was coming today, you were coming out the door and you were with Robert and Lucy Carter of the Grills Gallery as well. You know, amazing people that are doing so much for the art world here as well in the county, to have their gallery and to have it right in the heartbeat of the county.
I mean, they were always involved at K-Fest. So I learned their gallery through K-Fest when they had the open doors there. And then Robert and Lucy, they became friends also because they connect everyone. Mm. And their gallery, it's always, I think it's a center here in Kerry where it's not only, you know, artist and the client or the customer or the visitor, it's also the artist. It's from artist to the other artist. And last time when they did the Kerry Selected opening, I went there and it was like, you know, a family gathering. It was not a reunion of only K-Fest artists. It's, you know, when they left K-Fest, artists all still evolve and develop, and they keep them all together, I think, in my opinion.
Yeah. Will we go down and look at the exhibition?
Sure, let's go.
Marcus Earhart there. We're going to hear more from Marcus after these.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you by Quinlan's Fish Shops and Seafood Bars, located across Kerry. Enjoy a simple, healthy and easy dinner solution with Quinlan's fresh, ready-made seafood meals. Available in store.
Now, before the break, you were listening to Marcus Earhart about his exhibition, 9 Years in Glenbey. So we were chatting away in one of the offices upstairs at the Department of Culture, Communications and Sport in New Road, Killarney. And we went downstairs then to the exhibition space to actually see this wonderful exhibition. Okay, we're down here in the ground floor, in the main entrance, and this is where your exhibition is, Marcus. So firstly, we're looking at an amazing headpiece here. Reminds me of the dandelions you used to blow on when you were a kid.
That's exactly. That is a reminiscence to a dandelion. And as I said before, in design, everything you design has to look like $1 million. And so I came to the word dandelion, which is, I mean, it's a crazy idea, but yes. So the dandelion is a very fragile piece in nature, and which needs kind of a protection. And so I did this graffiti with a dandelion in a glass sphere, which looks like a safe space. So in that case, the art is a bit more going into the direction of romanticism and not into provocation. And so I thought, well, why not placing an older work of mine from the time I worked for Philip Tracy in London. And so I became his plumissier, which is, it was called plumissier, which is translated something like a feather decorator. So you work with feathers and you try to make them not looking like feathers again. And so this hat here is a symbol for me that is also the idea of the haute couture in Paris, which I was involved working with him twice. And so what we did for the couture is that the feather should become supernatural. So that you put work into something no one else will do. I remember for one headpiece, I did elongate the feathers with other kilts, just to make them even look larger, bigger, longer. And that was what you did in the haute couture, that you stylize your work, you put it on a different level, and you put work into something no one else will do. And this is something I transformed from my design, and which I now took over into my art. So in the next installation here, I call it the iconography of Ross Bay Beach Findings. It's a valley boot, yes, we all know. And I found that at the beach after a storm, and also this pillar. And I had the idea, I have to make a balance of it. That was, these days, my first application for K-Fest. And to make a balance to make people more aware of the environment here. And I mean, it's an ironic symbol that the valley boot that protects us from getting wet, or I mean, it has a safety cap, a steel toe, and a long shaft with reinforcement in it, that it protects our feet. But once you chuck it into the ocean, it will cause microplastic. And it's made of PVC. If it would be made of natural rubber, it would dissolve and would not leave traces. And so I thought to make a bit, you know, more the awareness of what you find at the beach. And I placed a stone on it. The stone symbolizes our environment, and be literally kicking it. And I thought, well, how can I transport this idea to make it accessible to people? And so I came up with the idea of an iconography. And as, again, I put work into something no one else would do, I started repeating the sculpture that was made first. So at first I made a photograph of it. So that's the first transformation, because there are people who are more into photography than into oil paintings, for example. On the very left, you see a relief. It's made of wood. And, for example, blind people are invited to touch it. So you can touch it and to feel the proportions and to feel the balance of it. Next, we have a mosaic, which is a reminiscence to Trier, it's Germany's oldest city. It's the other city I live in. And wherever you dig a hole in Trier, you find Roman remains, like mosaics. And I thought, oh, that could be an interesting feature to transport the idea as well. And
it's a nod to your homeland.
Yes. Yeah. But when I presented it over here, people are not aware of Roman mosaics. They all say, oh, these are pixels. And, I mean, it's a very modern view on it. And I thought, well, it's right. Mosaic was an early pixel or a collection of pixels. And next in line is a graffiti, which I address again to a younger viewer. Because, you know, graffiti is there, kind of cool, and people may get access to that as well. Then followed by ink drawing. I love to draw with ink because it's a very it's very liquid and it's very bright colors you can have with that. And then again, the proportion and the shape, everything is in line. And the hanging was made that everything is in the right spot and the right height as the original. Then something more abstract and going a bit crazy and wild with my acrylic painting, which is obviously not that my main technique to draw with, but I quite like the weirdness of it because, you know, it distracts. So your eye is getting taught by repeating, and this is all of a sudden, you know, puts it into a completely different space again. And at the end, it's a marker drawing, and I did hand-dotted everything, and which I thought, okay, I can go way more into details and into bright colors. I think on this one, I made about 400,000 dots. It's a lot, and it took me, for example, 5 weeks to do that, whereas the graffiti took me just 2 hours in the morning. So on the other side, you cannot compare, you know, this one with that one, but I guarantee when you see it, you will have a favorite.
Yeah, I was about to say, that's my favorite, the one with the dots.
Great,
yeah,
selection.
So it was worth the time.
And so, but my intention is that when someone sees this one, everyone will have a favorite of it. But when you walk out, you will have that picture in your mind. And that's all I can do as an artist, to set an image in the other one's mind and that it stays there. And, you know, next time when you go to the beach, maybe, you know, you start grabbing always a handful of something you find there and to make the world a bit of a better place.
And so just to finish up, because we're out of time, there's so much more in this exhibition as well for people to see.
The exhibition continues with more Irish subjects like rams or sheep, or some more beach findings like the crab claws I found, or a piece of the sunbeam that was once stranded at Ross Bay Beach.
Marcus, thanks a million for welcoming me to the exhibition. The detail of your work and the expressiveness of it, the talent in it, you could be here all day looking at it, and that's why I'd recommend people to come here and see it for themselves. It's absolutely fantastic. It's great to have someone like yourself in this county to add to the artistic talent that we have here already. So I want to wish you all the best.
Thanks
a million for inviting me here.
Thank you very much. I'm very honoured. Thank you.
How long more is the exhibition running till?
The exhibition is until the 20th of February, open daily weekdays, Monday to Friday from 9 to 5.
And for people that want to find out more about yourself, you're on social media?
I'm on social media. Marcus.erhard is my profile, or my website is ornito.com, ornito.com.
That's Marcus Earhart there, and well done to him, and I wish him continued success into the future. We're going to take a break, and after that, we're going to have another artist, Ciara Chute, living in Ballinskellig.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you by Quinlan's Fish Shops and Seafood Bars, located across Kerry. Take the fear out of fish and chat to our fishmongers about how to add delicious, easy-to-cook seafood into your menu. Oven and air fryer-ready meals available.
Now it's time for another episode of An Artist's Kingdom, and this time we're going to Ballinskellig to hear from Ciara Chute.
This documentary is a Kishta Communications production, funded by Cumashuna Man with a television licence fee.
This is Artist's Kingdom, an 8-part radio series that takes listeners on an immersive journey into the diverse and vibrant world of artists in County Kerry. Through the lens of creativity, we will explore the unique cultural landscape that has inspired generations of artists, shaping their work and contributing to the rich artistic tapestry of the region. The series will gather some of the finest artists in the county, where they share a dedication to their art. We will explore some of the most impressive and interesting Kerry-based artists today, who are truly doing their county proud. Ciara Chute is a visual artist and writer, originally from Longford, and is now based in Ballinskellig, County Kerry. Her work is multidisciplinary, using imagery and word to explore dark yet real elements with a touch of colourful serenity and artistic licence.
Hi, I'm Ciara Chute and I'm a visual artist. I am originally from the Midlands in Longford, and that's where I grew up, and I moved to Kerry in 2015.
Growing up, Ciara was always creative.
I guess my copybooks were covered in drawings and doodles, but I was always creative, never really thought of it as a career as such. But yeah, I would have always been into creativity. Like I said, doodling, drawing is what we call it now.
Being artistic is in the genes for Ciara.
My mother is an artist too. She's a painter, predominantly on silk painting and slate. And so as a child, I would have been familiar with art in the sense that my mother was always doing something at the kitchen table. She had a full-time job, so it was kind of a side thing. And then now she's more of a full-time artist. Over the last few decades, she gave up her main job to focus on art. So yeah, there was always kind of some creativity in the household, but I was also kind of sporty and doing other things as well, just typical kind of teenager. But art was, like I said, I didn't actually study it in schools. It wasn't something I seen as a career back then.
It was towards the end of secondary school that Ciara started contemplating having a career as an artist.
So, typical story, I was 17, had to fill out my CEO form, and I distinctly remember it being full of every type of subject, whether it was psychology, I think there was equine studies in there, I think there was even physical education, media art. So I originally went into journalism. I liked English growing up, so that's what I got. So I moved to Dublin when I was 17 to study journalism, and then did that for 4 years, originally did that to be a travel journalist, travelled lots, and then lived abroad quite a bit, came back, studied performing arts. So I kind of always veered into creative subjects for study, basically anything you can't really earn a huge living out of. But I went away to Australia for 3 years, and then when I was over there, I was, I guess, mid-20s, and I came back after 3 years. I came back originally, in my heart I knew I was always an artist, and that's when I decided I really wanted to go back and study art. But I, you know, it's always been in me. It's something that's been part of me, not something that I thought about studying, but I thought it would be easier to come back home after being in Australia and then kind of work from Ireland outwards in terms of and making a life as an artist for myself. So I went to the Gorey School of Art in County Wexford and did an intensive year there. And then I moved down to Kerry in 2015 to be involved in the Kyrillic project. And I've been coming and going since the last 10 years down in South West Kerry and Ballinskellig. So that's how I got into art, and I've been doing solo shows maybe consistently every year for the past nearly 6+ years. I've been an artist for the last 10 years full time. I'm also writing as well, so it's kind of both, it's text and painting.
When Ciara came to South Kerry, she started working at the famous Kilreely Gallery in Ballinskellig.
I originally came to work in the gallery. I'm also the gallerist in Kilrillig. It's a Kilrillig project. It was founded by Dr. Noelle Campbell-Sharp over 30 years ago. And I came down in 2015 to work with her and be involved in the gallery there. And essentially what I do is I run the events there, the exhibitions, and a bit of fundraising to keep the project going. It's an artist retreat up in Bulla's Head. So that's what I came down to do originally in 2015, and obviously I've been to the retreat myself as a painter, so when I have solo shows coming up I might do a stint there, and it's a great way to intensively work and get the body of work together. So the residencies would be from 1 week to 4 weeks. So people from all over the world come to this little place called Ballinskellig, which makes it very interesting. Obviously, as an artist, it's important to be networking with other galleries around the country, and that's, being in Ballinskellig, you're quite far away from everywhere, but I guess what I'm trying to say is I don't really have to leave because everyone comes here to us from all over the world.
Being an art resident at the Kilreely Village is a unique experience.
So I guess when you're up there, I hear stories from people from maybe London or Japan or America, and they come there, and every time they come into the gallery to me, they're just taken away by the quietness and the peacefulness. It takes at least a few days to settle into that. Obviously I'm kind of down the mountain where I'm based here in South West Kerry along the coast. Up in Bowler's Head, there's another kind of energy up there. It's just overlooking the Atlantic on the mountain, on the side of the mountain, and it's there's just this otherworldly kind of element to it, where you look out onto the water and you just feel a sense of calm and peacefulness, and you're not compelled. The reason it works up there is that you're not compelled to create at all, but you will inevitably want to create something, just because I guess the pressure's off. With other residencies, you have to maybe meet up with people or maybe do some sort of interactive element, whether it's give workshops or give an artist talk. But in Kilreely, you're very much left to your own devices, and you will of course meet the other people in the other colleges. It's always a nice surprise to see who your neighbour is. They could be a writer, painter, musician, composers, across all the different creative fields. It just works. I mean, I've been to other residencies around the country and abroad, and I think given your own studio space and your own cottage, each artist gets their own space. So you're in it all the time when you're there. It's kind of a loft bedroom, and then the studio is below, so you're constantly looking at the work, and it's quite intensive, but it really progresses the work if you want to get something out of it, especially if you have a deadline to work towards. I've actually got an inquiry about it from a German artist recently, and she texts me. She's like, "I'm just wondering, is there electricity up in the cottages?" And I was like, it's not back in the 1800s. Yes, there's electricity up there. There's no Wi-Fi, although of course you can tether off your phone. But the idea is that there is no Wi-Fi for that reason, is to have that kind of sense of calm. I mean, we are, you know, always fully attached to our phone or always plugged in, so it's nice to just have that full integration of kind of peacefulness and get your head down and be engrossed in your own creativity for that period of time.
Kira uses a variety of techniques and approaches in her work.
My work is quite gestural. A lot of the time it's based on the physicality of painting itself, you know, the innate mark making that's in us. My work is very much based on body memory, and like I said, I'm also a writer, so I will simultaneously be writing text while I'm painting at the same time. And the fact that they kind of come from the same person, myself, and you know, they kind of pair up kind of naturally at the end to create that body of work. But the process, I guess, is kind of all the paintings are kind of layered up. I'll be constantly kind of adding and subtracting and contemplating, sitting back. I work quite quickly, and then I'll kind of take a step back and maybe just have a look at them and see what I'll add or take away. They're colourful, I guess. My work is defined by the bold colours and the bright tones. And I work a lot on the ground because they're quite large. And sometimes I do installation work as well on big, large paper pieces, and I work on canvas. I love kind of working, you know, having that space in the ground and being able to move around the piece, and it adds a different element. There's definitely more movement in the work when you're kind of, it's more freeing when you're on the ground. You can feel the kind of, it's more physical then.
Kira's first exhibition was in her local county of Longford.
The first exhibition I kept at local, back up in Longford. I had a studio space in the Loon Gallery, the Abbey Road Studios, which are connected to the Loon Gallery in County Westmeath and at Loan, for 3 years. And then I had a studio space in Longford for a year up until last July there. So the first show I had was... it was in a new library in my local town in Edgerton, and it was a great way to fully connect back with my home place and the memories of my home place, and, you know, obviously that's where I'm from, so it was lovely to showcase my first solo show there. And yeah, that's around 6 years ago now. And then I've been working kind of outwards ever since. And, you know, I probably will go back there again and have another solo show soon enough. But since then, I have had solo shows in Sheam Satira in Tralee. And I've had one in Kilrillig. And then I had one in Farmley in Dublin, in the Phoenix Park there. Not last July, the July before, so a year and a half ago. And then my next one is in the Ballina Arts Centre, and that's next April 2026. So yeah, I try and keep it consistent in terms of solo shows. It's, to me, having a deadline is very important as an artist in order to progress and to continue on with the themes and maybe put a line underneath the theme and move on to the next body of work. I think it's deadlines are the way to go. It works for me.
And what exactly does an exhibition entail?
Yeah, so it depends on the venue. So because I'm a painter, you know, my work is saleable, so there will be work for sale at the show. For example, the Farmley show was multidisciplinary, so it was a mixture of installation, paintings and text. So the paintings were for sale, the installation not for sale, and then I had a lot of different sculptures on plinths as well, and different objects on plinths, so they weren't for sale. So you'll stipulate that in the show, and there'll be labels beside each piece saying not for sale, or price on application, and then the text wasn't for sale, but a lot of people were actually asking about whether the text was in a copy book form that they could take away. So that's something that I'll work towards, maybe an artist book or a textbook for the next shows.
Kira always follows a theme in her exhibitions, and she's been following a particular theme over the last number of years.
So over the last few years, the theme has been based on body memory, so it's an ongoing theme at the moment. So for example, the Shim Satira, that was about how the body remembers what the mind forgets, and how sometimes, you know, in terms of mark making, how that's innately part of our body, and it's kind of deeply ingrained from centuries gone by, you know, symbolism, and we were always making marks and symbols to communicate. And then the last show in Farmley, I kind of added another element to that. It was based on body memory, but I added the term minimalism, and how kind of I believe that perhaps we're more innately minimal beings, but there's always this push towards materialistic ways of life. So it's kind of finding that balance. It was kind of based off the theory that if attics had glass floors, would we keep all the stuff? I think as I get older, I find that I have stuff everywhere. So there's things up in the attic in my hometown in Longford. I have things as a painter, you just accumulate a lot of things. So it was based around the theory that if we had less stuff, we would feel richer in spirit. So it's kind of finding that balance of what to let go of and what to keep. And I'm still working on that. It's a hard one. And then the upcoming show, again, this one is still around body memory, but I'm adding kind of the ritual element to it, in the sense that I believe that kind of ancient rituals are deeply embedded in our DNA, and how do we kind of awaken that to kind of be more peaceful within ourselves and be connected back to nature, and how they kind of, the old and the new, walk parallel, you know, with parallel together, you know, with technology and the ancient rituals, how they can be walking side by side.
That's the first part of An Artist's Kingdom with Ciara Chute, and we're going to hear more after these.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry, brought to you by Quinlan's Fish Shops and Seafood Bars, located across Kerry. Supplement your diet with a healthy and fresh dinner option. Fresh seafood from Quinlan.
Now let's return to the episode of An Artist's Kingdom featuring Balanced Skeddix-based artist Ciara Chute. Ciara has travelled a lot in her life, and this has also influenced her work.
I think it definitely, you know, the travel throughout the last decades, maybe mostly my 20s and into my 30s, I was always taking notes, writing about my travels, and all my work comes from personal experience. So essentially, I mightn't have been creating art then or doing the solo shows back then, but I was always kind of gathering information and gathering materials that still kind of influence my work now. So I would have lived in Australia for 3 years, but part of that was based in an Aboriginal camp. I was in Harnham Land, where I was working as an arts facilitator there and helping out with just maybe doing some art workshops with children. And so that still influences my work in terms of the mark making and the Aboriginal kind of symbolism. And then I went to Palestine as well. That sometimes still influences my work. Obviously, it's kind of an ongoing topic at the moment. And yeah, just being out of the country and coming back in, and always kind of getting a different, fresh perspective of ways of living abroad and people and scenery abroad, that always kind of feeds back into the work. And like I said, I keep notes and I write poetic text, and that will be used then for different solo shows that I put on.
Whilst a lot has been done for art in this county, what more can be done in Ciara's opinion?
I mean, obviously, I'm coming from, you know, I came down here to work with the Kilbilic Project, which is an amazing initiative, and still is. It's full all year round from artists from all over the world, and there is different contemporary galleries popping up. There's one in Killorglin, and there was one in Kemer, the Kemer Butter Market, but that unfortunately is shut down now. And there's other galleries around the place. But I feel, I guess what I can only compare, not that I want to compare, but I can only go off the back of what I know from being a Midlands artist as well, where I would have had government-funded studios up there for 3 years, and also in Longford. That was both in Athlone and in Longford. And it's such an amazing feeling to be able to go into that space, whatever the size of it, and have other maybe artists working alongside in their own space, and then come out of it after the day and lock up, and all your paintings are there, and then walk away. And it's a workspace. It makes you feel more like it is kind of a, not a proper job. Of course it's a proper job being, you know, an artist, but if you don't have the physical space to go to and from, it's you know, it's harder. And so I think in terms of improvement, I mean, that's what something I would really love to see happening in Kerry is artist spaces, studio spaces for artists that are funded by the government, that they're subsidised by the government. Of course, you pay a certain amount of rent, and that's fine, and then the government will subsidise the rest of it. And then also maybe more contemporary art spaces for painters or for visual artists to showcase their work throughout the county. I mean, it's a very big county. There's three peninsulas. I'm based on the Evora, and there's the Dingle and Bear Peninsula. So it'd be lovely to see maybe one or two more contemporary art spaces to give all the people. There's a lot of artists in this county a chance to exhibit their work, rather than kind of always having to outsource it into different counties. So that's kind of two aspects that I see would be great for improving kind of the lives of artists in the county.
Kira has also recently become a mom, and this life-changing experience has also influenced her work.
Yeah, so I always, this is a kind of, to me, obviously, this is something that is very in the moment now, and that's the way I work. I work based on personal experience in the present moment. So, of course, being a mother has definitely influenced my art and going forward. I try and write every day, whether it's 20 minutes when the baby's napping, it depends. I just sit down to have a cup of coffee, do some writing, and she'll wake up. So yeah, it's kind of finding the balance of getting the time to write and be creative. But it's funny, the phrase "you have more time when you have less time" always seems to come up in this new role, because you're kind of more conscious that you have less time, so you'll get more done within that time that you have free. I always thought there'd be two separate entities, that art would be one thing and motherhood would be another, but now I'm realising that they're actually going to be kind of mishmashed in together, and being a mother is definitely going to influence how I look at things, my perspective on things. And even I find that the theme that I'm working towards for the show on Ballina, it's popping up a lot, because this is about how I want to incorporate old ways, or ancient rituals or old ways, back into my own life. And I'm just wondering, obviously she won't have the physical memory of that as a baby, but I wonder, is that gene embedded in her DNA? So, you know, from dancing to chanting to singing to all that, I'm conscious that I want her to have that. And even I'm talking about, you know, just things that I even grew up with, you know, just writing freehand. I kind of miss that. I'm doing less of that because I'm typing more, being outside more, looking to the sky to check the weather rather than Googling the weather, you know, different things like that, or playing outside a lot more. Screen time, I'm obviously conscious of that. So this is what, I guess, the new body of work is about. Listening to music, CDs. I miss playing CDs. I used to have a stack of CDs and I'd play a CD back to back, or tapes and all that. Nowadays people are on Spotify, so I listen to less music. So I want to kind of be conscious of that as a mother and bring all that back into my own life and then her life. Even reading physical books, you know, that's something I even miss as an adult now, because I guess we're on the computer so much that you're kind of drawn towards the phone or the computer more. So I need to consciously make a decision to maybe slot out an hour to do that, maybe whether it's once a week or twice a week. So yeah, I think being